The day is over, but the night has just begun. This is WTMJ Nights, live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue. Here's your host, Brian Noonan.
Good evening. Welcome. So glad you're with us. Big show tonight. You should get involved on the WTMJ Talk and Text line. It's 855-616-1620. Oh, my goodness. Where to start? Well, if you're calling in, you'll be talking to Matt. We'll start with that. Matt's producing the show. It'd be nice to him. You get to me. Then we actually have two text questions of the night tonight because a couple things popped into my noggin. First, you know, you heard Jessica say, and you probably knew this, Governor Evers is about to give the State of the State address. In one sentence or less, what would you say the State of the State is? See if you mesh with the governor. What is your State of the State? And then, just 180 degrees from the State of the State, today is National Handwriting Day. Do you think cursive writing should still be taught in school? And do you have good handwriting? I have horrible handwriting because I don't do it anymore. If I use a pen or a pencil, I print. I can't sign my name the same way twice. You know, if I have to go through, like even when I was getting my passport, I had to, you know, there's a lot of forms you can sign. And I'm like, the feds are going to come after me because there's nothing that is the same. I can sign my signature five times. None of them will look the same. Now, Matt, you're a young man. When you were in school, did they still teach cursive writing?
I was at the tail end of teaching cursive. They got rid of it, I think, 2 years after I started learning it, but I actually never learned cursive because my printing was so bad that when the rest of the class learned cursive, I was pulled into another room to continue refining my printing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You just never, like, so when you were in first and second grade and you were working on your letters, did you just skip school those days?
I skipped the lines. I wouldn't necessarily say I skipped school, but my A's were, you know how they have those dotted lines in the middle?
Yeah.
And then sometimes they have them inflated on the paper so you know when to stop for a lowercase.
Sure.
They're like perforated.
Yeah, yeah.
I just couldn't hit those lines. Even if you looked, I have a little checklist for each show right in front of me.
Yeah.
If you looked at that, you'd be like, man, this kid hasn't worked on his handwriting in 20 years.
Yeah.
See, it's terrible.
That's how it is. That's how it is if I cursive. Because I also, my mom has the most beautiful handwriting you've ever seen. And I think it's because the way they were, and my aunts and a lot of people I know, you know, that age, it was a way they were taught their handwriting. And they say you're supposed to, you know, move your whole arm and I only would move my fingers. So my handwriting was never great, but I can print pretty well. You know, my printing, I would say is good. Everything, all my rundown sheets, all my notes, pretty much anything I hand write is printed. And I think that's just, and it's all printed in capital letters too. Unless I'm printing something for the little kids at school, like on the whiteboard or something, then I have to remember that I need to use a capital letter and then lowercase letters. But other than that, it's all capital letters, which I'm sure I've read some handwriting analysis and psychology saying that there's a problem with that I am somehow subconsciously screaming at people and want everybody to pay attention to me because I print in all capital letters. And I said, well, I don't think my handwriting is what gave that away. Maybe it's what I do for a living. But so that's it. Yeah, we don't teach handwriting. Occasionally a kid will get a wild hair at home or they'll see somebody do it and they'll come in and they'll try to do cursive, even though it's not, we don't teach it. And some of the kids get it. Some of them, they're almost like you, Matt. They're having enough trouble with printing. We got to just focus on the printing. We don't have to worry about the cursive writing. All right, we are hoping to, we'll talk to Justin Garcia at the end of the show. Right before he comes on with Bucks Weekly, we're going to have him jump on with us for a few minutes, and we are going to talk about this Adrian Griffin firing. I was, now, as a sports play-by-play guy, Matt, you probably know this. And I know enough about sports, I think, to be able to have opinions and things. What I don't get is, with the record that the Bucks have, 30-13, second in the East at this point, things are looking pretty good. But I know that's not the reason that Griffin got fired. I know it has something to do with the defense, and the defense dropping from the top of the league last year down to almost the bottom, and even though he was supposed to be a defensive coach. So I was a little shocked by this. Did you, when you heard this news, did you fall out, as the kids like to say?
This definitely came out of left field, but when you unpack the reasons why it happened, you're not searching for answers. So am I shocked to see a team that has a 30-13 record, two of the best players in the NBA, and their record reflects? It's one of those things where you'll ask, what else is Coach Griffin supposed to do?
Yeah.
But when you peel the onion back a tad, there are some reasons that make this make sense, but to do it in the middle of the season, and Justin will have more on this in a little bit.
Yeah.
But even though he's not executing where he's supposed to execute, with him being a defensive guy and the Bucks not having the correct fit, you see it a lot in football where a coach will be fired because he doesn't fit the scheme that's given to him. It's
yeah,
a little.
Well,
it's similar
here.
The players
aren't able to adjust to his
exactly
his way
but,
of doing things, which seems to be the case more than the former, wouldn't you say?
With Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton, Giannis, the guys the Bucks have, they're not going to be a team that is strong at the point of attack on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to be a team that is going to sit back and outscore the other team and make it a shootout. They're not going to be a team that is going to pressure the ball. They're not going to be a team that is going to wreak havoc on opposing offenses. And we don't know the direction the Bucks are going to go in, whether it's Doc Rivers, whether it's somebody else. But they're looking for that.
I got to ask Justin about this because I just saw, I was, you know, prepping the show, and I saw a report that, now, again, this is, sports guys love to try to be first. Most reporters do, but sports guys more than anybody, they want to have the breaking story. And I saw a report that said the Bucks had hired Doc Rivers a month ago. I don't know. It seemed a little far-fetched to me, but we'll see if there's more of more theories, more conspiracies when we check in with Justin Garcia in a little bit. But yeah, it was. I don't know. When you've got, I can see if a first-year coach, even if he has superstars, if the record is horrible, like if it had been flipped and they were 13-30, you go, oh yeah, of course. But 30-13, pretty good at the halfway point. But we'll figure out. Who do you think it's going to be? Do you think it's going to be Doc Rivers?
I would find it hard to believe it would be anybody else. Like you said, Brian, they brought Doc in a month ago in a, you know, abyss role. Because keep in mind, Doc Rivers still is under a massive contract with ESPN. I'm not sure what the buyouts are there, considering he's on their top team and he's slated to broadcast the NBA Finals in June. But with him, he's a veteran head coach. He's won a title. The issue is then you're going to have to start from scratch. You're going to have to redo all the systems. Keep in mind, Coach Griffin just finished building his staff. He brought in a couple guys late. And now we'll have to see how that dynamic works. And Justin will have more insight into it. But there's a lot more that comes to this. And you have to have a lot of confidence in making this move. Because if it does not work with this team after claiming your championship window is narrow, you have to be 100% sure that this move is going to pay off for you to make it.
Sounds good. We will talk about this more later on. Our text question of the night, we have two. The governor is giving state address tonight in one sentence or less. What would be your state of the state? And it's National Handwriting Day. Should cursive writing still be taught in school? And how's your handwriting? From the 414, I think cursive writing education should be limited to teaching a student to sign his or her name. Anything more is a waste of time and borderline sadistic. Yeah, I mean, most of our correspondence is done via email, text, things like that. We're typing. We're sending. I don't know anybody who really writes a letter anymore. I'm sure there are people. I actually got a handwritten thank you note from something last week, and I thought that was a very nice touch. But it might have been printed. I know when I send cards or stuff, I print them. All right, let's take a quick break because, oh my goodness, what? It's time for the annual resetting of the doomsday clock. How close are we to the end of times? We'll get into that and more. It's WTMJ Nights. Brian Noonan here until 8. Then it is Bucks Weekly with Justin Garcia. Oh my goodness. The doomsday clock has another update. That's right. But the good news is it hasn't changed since last year. The bad news is, according to the doomsday clock, it is still 90 seconds to midnight, the closest the clock has been in its history. Midnight is the moment that symbolizes doomsday. Yes. The experts who maintain the doomsday clock said today that humanity is still as close as ever to global catastrophe, which could involve nuclear war, climate change, or maybe even artificial intelligence. I know you're like, hey, Brian, we come to this show to have a good time. What's with all the doomsday talk? I don't know. I just want to put the fear of God in everybody because, some people need to think that the end is nigh. Maybe they'll change their behaviors. So the time on the symbolic clock is the same as last year. It's 90 seconds to midnight. It's a metaphor. The doomsday clock is for how close humanity is to self-annihilation. You know what's funny? I think about the doomsday clock once a year, and that's the day that they reset it or keep the setting the same. It's not like I don't think I'm different from pretty much anybody. How often are you thinking about the doomsday clock? Probably not in those terms. I mean, with all that's going on in the world, there's probably a lot of time when we're like, oh man, this could be dire. But we don't go check the doomsday clock, see what time it is. So the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, they started maintaining the clock in 1947 at the University of Chicago. It remained at the same time as last year due to the continued heightened levels of risk from threats such as ongoing wars and out-of-control climate change. This year, experts also said they were especially worried about how advances in artificial intelligence could sow chaos, making it harder to prevent global disasters. Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see when we get closer to the election. Now, I know the New Hampshire primaries are tonight. You're probably following those. And Jessica will keep you updated on any results we get as the news progresses throughout the night. But, AI, I do worry about AI. I know I always sound very much like an old man when I say I worry about AI. But there's somebody, it was dumb. Something on Jimmy Kimmel. They played a robocall that had gone out in, might have been Jimmy Kimmel. Maybe it was the actual news. But, maybe it was the actual news. They had sent out a robocall in New Hampshire purporting to be President Biden, and it was put together by AI. And if you listened really close, it was the president's voice, but it was obviously a highly, highly edited, very halting recording. But that might have just been a hastily done AI. There's really good ones. All right. AP has called New Hampshire for Donald Trump. Trump with 52.5%. Nikki Haley with 46.6%. Pretty close, actually. Surprisingly close for New Hampshire. But that's the AP is calling New Hampshire for Trump. Thank you, Matt, for sending that along. That's the crack WTMJ Knights staff doing what I am not. I'm worried about the doomsday clock and AI, and they're actually getting the hard news to come at you. But so there you go. We're 90 seconds to midnight, which is not a band that plays 90s pop hits, but the actual time on the doomsday clock. And then who knows what will happen? Probably nothing. Doomsday clock is going to stay there. All right, one of our text questions was about cursive writing. And a text from the 262 is a 30-year veteran of teaching. I can tell you that there is more to cursive writing than just a signature. There have been studies done that show that cursive is linked to brain development and certain connections in the brain. Huh. Interesting. And yet, nobody teaches it. Well, one, to be quite honest, there's no time in the school day. I know in the young classes, in kindergarten and first grade, we do handwriting, but that's to get, that's so kids can learn their letters and learn how to, and Matt, those are the days that Matt missed. But, you know, and Matt, did you have the little, like, we use the handwriting book. Did they have the book with like a picture of an apple, and then they would have the uppercase and the lowercase A, and you would have to do that?
I can tell you about the apple and the upper and lowercase A. I don't know what they had B through Z. I never got to that.
Wow. But look how far you've come.
I know. It's amazing.
With such limited ability to write letters. That's very good. You should be very proud of yourself. It's a flex. Hey, I can't write, but look at what I can do. That's perfect. All right, let's take a break. And... then there's more. Of course there is. It's WTMJ Nights. On the other side of the news, the Oscar nominations came out today. We'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll check in with Justin Garcia and get some more information on what's going on with the Bucks. I almost didn't make the show, Matt. I fell just as I was coming into to turn everything on.
You okay?
I tripped over the... Well, yes. Unfortunately, my printer tray is not... Because I fell, and as I fell, I reached out, and you know the piece on the printer tray that stops the paper from just shooting off across the room? My paper's going to be shooting off across the room for a while. That piece is gone. Snapped right off. But, and then as I fell, I banged into a bookshelf, and I was pelted with all these hats that are on top of the bookshelf, and I was just laying there on the dog bed going, oh no, I can't get up. The biggest fear, like with all the ice today, and then with all the the biggest fear I have is falling down. I have reached that age where falling down it's a priority. I got up today and I was like, I don't want to go out. There's ice everywhere. I'm going to fall. You know, I did the little grandpa shuffle as I went out today till I get to the garage so I could salt everything because. Anybody, like you're young, Matt, if you fall, you're going to bounce back up, you're spry and nimble. You get to a certain age, you fall, and that could be it. And that, you know, if I fall out in the alley or something, nobody's going to come find me. I'm just going to be laying there, all broken, just crying. But anyway, I survived, and I'm here. And so after the news, we're going to talk a little Oscar nominations. But right now, it is time for us to go to the WTMJ 24-Hour News Center, where Jessica Gatto has not fallen down. She is standing by with the news. Oh, my goodness. It is WTMJ Nights. Brian Noonan here until 8 o'clock. Then it's Bucks Weekly with Justin Garcia. The 2024 Oscar nominations came out today. I have to confess, I have not seen many of the movies this year for whatever reason. One, I don't go to the theaters anymore. I can't. I wait till the movies come on streaming services, and then I watch them at home. I don't know when I'll go back to the theater, but it hasn't been this year. Oppenheimer led the all nominations with 13 nominations. Not too bad. Followed by a movie I've never heard of, Poor Things, and that got 11 nominations. Now, Oppenheimer, did you see Oppenheimer, Matt?
I haven't seen any of the movies that are up for nomination.
Right. Perfect. But 3 hours. That's the thing. I it's on streaming now. I could watch it. But every time I think about watching it, I think, well, it's 3 hours. Now, I'm watching it at home, so I could break it up. Like with The Irishman, I watched, I broke it up. But I also sometimes sit down and watch 3 hours worth of episodic stuff. So I don't know what it is. I know, you know, it's probably very heavy, Oppenheimer. You know, the subject matter is not light and airy. But, and the performances are supposed to be good. So that's it. I still haven't watched Barbie either. And I, I do want to watch Barbie. I think it'll be silly fun, and there you go. But I haven't watched that yet either. There was a lot of hubbub today because Greta Gerwig, the director of Barbie, and Margot Robbie, Barbie herself, were snubbed. No nominations, despite the fact that supporting actor and actress, America Ferrera and Ryan Gosling, both nominated. The movie nominated for Best Picture. And yet, Barbie herself snubbed. And the director, the woman who made it, boom, she doesn't get it. But the ladies getting it done at the Oscars this year. For the first time ever, the Best Director category has three female nominees. So that's good. Yeah. So there we go. Oh, the best pictures, have three movies directed by women. So here are the nominees for Best Picture. Again, I haven't seen any of them. American Fiction, that's with, who was in that one? Jeffrey Wright is in that one, supposed to be very good. Anatomy of a Fall, no idea what it is. Barbie, The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti. Killers of the Flower Moon, which I've heard good things and bad things about it. Another three-hour movie. What, do we need three-hour movies? I know people, artists want to create. And I know some people say, oh, 3 hours, it sounds like you're old, you can't sit. And 3 hours just seems long, right? It's just too long. Maestro with Bradley Cooper, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, and Poor Things. Those are your Best Picture nominees. So, Matt, we've seen none of them. Zone of Interest is also one of the Best Pictures. I remember the time when I would have seen like 7 or 8. Back when they only had 4 or 5 nominees, I would have seen most of them. Best Actress, Annette Bening in Naiad, didn't see it. Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, didn't see it. Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan in Maestro, and Emma Stone in Poor Things. Best Actor. I saw one of these movies. Bradley Cooper in Maestro, didn't see it. Coleman Domingo in Rustin. Rustin was really good. Rustin is about a civil rights activist who worked with Martin Luther King that most people, including a lot of African Americans, had never heard of. The movie was phenomenal. It's on Netflix. So if you want to catch up with that, Rustin, I can give two solid thumbs up. Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. Best Supporting Actress, Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks in The Color Purple, America Ferrera in Barbie, Jodie Foster in Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. And finally, Best Supporting Actor, Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Bob A.D., Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., he seems to be the odds-on favorite to win the Oscar. They're really pushing for Robert Downey Jr. I like Robert Downey Jr. I think he's a really good actor. I loved him as Iron Man. I'm not going to apologize for that. I liked him in other stuff, but I loved him as Iron Man. Ryan Gosling in Barbie and Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. Oh, and then we'll throw in the directors. Why not? Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, and Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. So there you go. I'll be watching the Academy Awards on March 10th. I still like to watch the Academy Awards, even though I don't watch many other award shows. But there's something about the Oscars. I'm still kind of a sucker for the Oscars, even though, again, this is the only show where I feel like I'm missing out. I still love the movies and love going to movies and stuff, but I don't like going to movies. I like watching them at home. I don't know. There's something about carving up that time for a movie, even though, like I said, most of us will still sit and watch, we'll binge a couple episodes of a show, and that'll be that. From the 414, I give a moderate thumbs up to Killers of the Flower Moon, and I found myself in a book about 30 minutes into Barbie. It would have been sooner if I hadn't been navigating a very messy cheeseburger. I haven't seen any of the others. All right, fair enough. Yeah, listen, a cheeseburger will take precedence over a lot of stuff. I don't know. Matt, if you were a betting man, not having seen any movies, this will be a good guess. You haven't seen any of them, nor have I. Let's take a guess on Best Picture, and then we'll check back. You've got American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and Zone of Interest.
Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that's a good bet. Oppenheimer's going to win. Everybody, it seems to be the year of Oppenheimer. It was the year of Oppenheimer and Barbie, and yet, oh my goodness, I don't think Barbie's going to take it. I'm going to watch it. My wife, oddly enough, is the one who poo-pooed watching Barbie. She's like, nah, I don't know. I don't want to. I thought she'd be 100% on board. I got to tell you this before we take a break and talk to Justin. I get home from school today, and we have ADT. We have one of the security system, you know. And my wife says she had the day off. She goes, I got home from the grocery store, and there's something beeping downstairs, and it's freaking out the dogs. And so I look at the pad, and there's a warning thing, you know, a caution thing. And it says the CO2 detector downstairs is not working. And I'm like, okay. So I go downstairs, and I swap out the batteries. And I figure, well, this should do it, because in the past, anytime something has beeped, once I change the batteries, everything works fine. Well, it doesn't work. There's still a beeping. And I'm looking around. We have a smoke detector and then a smoke and CO2 detector in the basement. I check both of those. I've changed the batteries now, brand new batteries in both of them, and there's still a beeping. And my wife calls, and they tell her it's a medical emergency. Well, we don't have medical emergency monitoring. I'm not wearing I probably should start wearing, after I tripped over the dog bed, I probably should start wearing some sort of medical alert, but I don't have one. My wife doesn't have one. I'm downstairs with the guy from ADT on the phone, and we're going through all this stuff, and all of a sudden, our grand dog, who is staying with us this week, starts barking like crazy, and I hear a faint knock at the door. Now, we have a doorbell that's loud, but I hear a faint knock. I go up. It's the fire department. I look out the front window. There's a giant fire truck in front of our house. Lights going. There's three firefighters at my door when I open it up. And I'm like, hi, guys. What's going on? I'm on the phone with ADT right now. I'm sorry. He goes, yeah, we got an alarm that there was a medical emergency here. I'm like, no, there's not. And he says my wife's name. He goes, that's the name. It's under. I go, yeah, that's my wife. She's downstairs. She's fine. We don't have medical monitoring. He's like, she doesn't have a little bracelet? I go, no. And then I look, and right next to the door is a sledgehammer and a giant, like, pickaxe. I don't know if they were planning on breaking in the door, but I'm so glad that I heard the knock. And I looked, and I was like, man, I'm glad you guys didn't have to come in this way. And the oldest of the three firefighters says, yeah, I came up to knock on the door, and I see these guys with these tools, and I'm like, what are you going to do with those? So, yeah, quite an adventurous afternoon. Not as bad as it was for Adrian Griffin. Let's take a quick break. And then I'm very fortunate that Justin Garcia has said he will come in and try to explain everything to us about the firing before he actually does his own show where he talks about nothing but the Bucks. So it'll be like a little bit of an extended Bucks Weekly, a little bit of Crosstalk, and a little bit of WTMJ Nights, all mashed up for your listening enjoyment, and it will commence right after this. Brian Noonan, WTMJ Nights. After 8 o'clock, you'll be listening to Justin Garcia with Bucks Weekly, but because I know what I don't know, and some things need to be explained to me like I'm a child, Justin Garcia is joining us early to talk a little bit about what's been going on with the Bucks today. Justin, thanks for coming in a few minutes early. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. So, again, I'm a guy who prides himself in knowing what he doesn't know and not being afraid to say, I don't quite understand this. So, at 30-13, I don't understand what went on with Adrian Griffin today.
Well, he was relieved of his job.
Well,
so
I know he's not fired, but why? Usually firing is reserved for coaches whose teams are not doing well. And I know part of it, or maybe all of it, you can shed some light on this, is about he's supposed to be a defensive expert, and yet the Bucks defense has slid over this season from last year. They went from the top of the league in defense to toward the bottom of the league. Is that what it's really all about?
I think it's in a vacuum, that's part of it. Slid is putting it mildly, that as we sit here on January 23rd, they're rated 22nd defensively, which is a far cry from where they typically were the last 5 years. I mean, that's one extra two from where they were usually sitting. So that's the big difference. I think part of it is you expected and hoped to see a lot more progression at this point. That, if anything, you would make a stronger case that this team had regressed ever since right around Christmas, that they were seemingly building towards something. And it just took a massive step backwards around Christmas, and especially once we've gotten into January, where the Bucks are 6-5, and the defensive numbers are even uglier. The offense hasn't been great either. They're still scoring points, but it hasn't been done efficiently. So I think part of it is you didn't see that steady progression that at this point you need to see. It's an older team. It's a veteran team. You know, your window is only open so long, right? Not just for this team, but for every team, that they're in a we have to win and compete for a championship now mode. And that was, I guess, the most surprising thing about the Adrian Griffin hire in the first place was those coaches, you know, guys that are first-time head coaches, you usually don't pair those two together of looking to win a championship. And then, oh, by the way, here's a guy that has never been in that seat before. Right. So I think this was kind of we're not seeing what we need to see, and we don't have time to learn on the job in the playoffs. We have to act swiftly and basically not concede a year here when you don't know how long you'll have this group together.
Well, does this go back a little then to John Horst, who hired Adrian Griffin? And what you said makes perfect sense. If you got Damian Lillard, you have Giannis, you've got the team that's ready to go. If the window is there, why, and I know hindsight is 20/20, why, what was the impetus then to hire Adrian Griffin if he wasn't going to mesh with this veteran team that needed a coach who could deal with veterans and get them over that hump?
Well, the popular narrative that's out there is this was a Giannis decision and a Giannis hire. And I don't believe that's the case, that this was Giannis just saying, look, this is the guy, hire him. But I do think, you know, some of the things that we heard last year from this team, even when Mike Budenholzer was the head coach, you know, you think back to Bobby Portis making some comments late in the season and a few other guys mentioning just how much they really missed Darvin Ham when he left to become the head coach of the Lakers. I think that was a big part of it, is it wasn't just Giannis. He had talked about this. Bobby, as we mentioned, had talked about it. A number of guys that, you know, they really missed that guy that Darvin Ham was, a former player that could relate to them. He wasn't afraid to give them the bad news, right? And I think that was a lot of, okay, this is what we didn't have, and this is what the players are looking for. And Adrian Griffin checked off a lot of those boxes. You know, Chris and a number of players met with him as well. In the offseason and in through the hiring process. So this wasn't just a Giannis handpicked guy. Right. I think it was largely what a lot of those guys were looking for, and a coach that they could relate to, a coach that had been through those moments before. And of those finalists, you know, Nick Nurse, Kenny Atkinson, and Adrian Griffin, Griff was the one that checked all those boxes.
Okay, this is a dumb question then, but I'm going to ask it because I'm sure other people are thinking that. If Adrian Griffin is a guy that the team as a whole or even the main players are saying, hey, this is a guy we can play for, this is a guy we like, Where's the disconnect then?
In what we eventually saw?
Right. And like you're saying, okay, they all liked him. He checked all the boxes. Mm-hmm. Then things start off pretty good. Where does the disconnect come around Christmas? What causes these players who wanted this coach to not be able to function under his system?
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'll preface with I'm not in the locker room with the players, and I'm not trying to speak for them. But, you know, I do know based off the information that I had that the players all, you know, by and large, they really, really liked Adrian Griffin as a man and as a guy, that they loved him. But I think the larger thing was when you think back to four games in, they made their first change defensively, where this was going to be a high-pressure defense that tried to force turnovers, all these things that the Bucks had never done for the last 5 years. A part of that was the system that Bud ran. Part of it is also this is an older, aging group, and it's maybe not as athletic on the perimeter, which you kind of need that athleticism to pressure the ball and force turnovers and play this way. So I think a lot of us kind of raised eyebrows of, I just don't know if this style is going to work. And it took four games to see the first modification where you realize maybe we shouldn't play Brooke Lopez on the perimeter and have him do some of these things. We should probably let our seven-footer protect the basket. And I do wonder, not that I'm suggesting that he lost the team, but I just remember Mike Budenholzer telling some of us a year ago, a couple years ago, that like in this league, the players are smart. And once they get the sense that you're not, or at least that you maybe don't know everything that you're purporting to, and maybe we feel like we know more than you, you have lost them, and there's no moving forward from that. And that was the message Bud gave to a lot of us. And I'm not saying that's what was the case, but some of the numbers that you see, it's tough to say that maybe that wasn't a factor.
That's interesting. All right, so we're at this point. Adrian Griffin is gone. You've got Joe Prunty. He's going to be the interim coach. I guess I'm wondering why they didn't have somebody ready and to just go, or maybe they do and they just want to give it a couple days to kind of let the dust settle.
I would assume it's a couple days. You know, they don't have anybody on staff, and again, this isn't a knock on that coaching staff, but that was the other part, is Adrian Griffin was not an experienced head coach. This was his first go-around there, and this staff is another staff that lacked that experience. When you think back to Bud's coaching staff, Charles Lee was your lead assistant last year. He's the lead assistant with the Boston Celtics now. Taylor Jenkins was on that staff. He's the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies now. Darvin Ham, he's the head coach of the Lakers. So you had not only a very good coach, but you had a stable and experienced and good bench as well that we saw other teams interviewing assistants from that staff and hiring them. And that's just not the case with this staff, that they're on more the younger side in terms of their coaching career. I know you have some vets there, and Joe Prunty is one of those. But it wasn't that bench that you had under Mike Budenholzer. So there's no true in-house candidate. And in terms of making this move and saying, okay, we fired Adrian Griffin and here's the coach, those are tough optics too, because if that's the case and it's external, well, you've clearly been negotiating with somebody else about my job while I held the job. So I think it's going to be a matter of days probably before you have your next head coach lined up. It seems like all of the indications are there's a very good chance that's going to be Doc Rivers, if that is. It certainly creates a good story for the Chicago native and kid who has his number retired in Fiserv Forum, where he played for Marquette, where Marquette plays. He played in the Bradley Center. But all the stories that would check off there. And he's an experienced head coach, and I think the biggest asset that he would bring, if he is the coach, is experience in managing veteran players and stars and coaching those types of players. And that's where the Bucks are. This roster is a super team. And it's just like in Chicago when you had Phil Jackson. You need somebody to manage those types of players.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, and I know you're going to be covering this in depth after the 8 o'clock news. Thanks for jumping on with me, Justin. I always appreciate your time and your expertise, so thanks very much. All right, we got to get out of here. Be back on Thursday. Justin Garcia coming up on the other side of the news with Bucks Weekly. There might be some more things to talk about. Matt, thank you very much. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. Talk to you later. Have a great night. It's WTMJ.